It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. It is the Fantasy Feast Podcast. We do this bad boy year-round because, well, we want to give you guys the edge in fantasy football. Plus, there's just some awesome football conversations and breakdowns that we have. Last week, really enjoyed Evan's dynasty advice. Go back and listen to that one if you didn't, in terms of some buy low targets, some late round flyers. That was fantastic. Today, we are getting into the college prospects. We mentioned last week that Evan had a chance to break down the tape of a lot of these guys. Why not hear what he has to say? Of course, Evan, that I mentioned, is at Evan Silva, rotoworld.com on Twitter. Make sure you check him out. I am just at Ross Tucker NFL on Twitter, former NFL offensive lineman. But we're here today to hear Evan's breakdown of these top prospects. All right, Evan, well, we talked about it last week. I've been excited about this. I've seen some of your tweets at Evan Silva where you're breaking down some of these guys, the things you like, the things you don't. I know you've got some strong opinions. I know we talked about this a couple weeks ago with Josh Norris, but just reiterate why you think it's important to watch the college tape of these draft prospects.
I try to analyze them both from a statistical perspective and from a game tape perspective. And I mean, well, first of all, I just enjoy watching the players, and I always feel like, you know, instead of just looking at their box scores, I always feel like I get a better feel for what kind of player they are when I actually watch them play. It's always a priority for me. Right now, at this stage of the process, on all these guys that I'm going to cover or we're going to talk about today, and I'm going to try to go pretty quickly on each guy, but just point out critical statistics or critical characteristics on each of them and maybe provide an NFL comparison. I've watched at least three games and in some cases five games on these players. And, I hope to get to five or six for all the players by the end of the draft process.
Wow, that's awesome, man. That's why you're the best. Putting in the work, putting in the time. Let's start with a guy that a lot of people think is the number one receiver in the draft in Clemson's and Mike Williams.
Yeah, big wide receiver who plays like it. And it seems like he's valued by a lot of draft analysts as the number one receiver in the draft. I don't dispute that at all. I think that he's very close with Corey Davis, and they are both very different receivers. And we'll talk about Corey Davis in a second. But Mike Williams is very similar to Alshon Jeffrey. His bread and butter as a player are back shoulder catches and contested catches. The back shoulder connection from Deshaun Watson to Mike Williams was just a huge part of the Clemson passing game last year. Mike Williams is not really a separation wide receiver, especially down the field. I mean, his downfield catches are just, they're made all like Alshon makes his downfield catches, where he's going up and he's catching the ball with his hands, and high pointing the football. But Matt Harmon, who I think we've had on the show before and we will probably have on again before the draft or maybe even after the draft, did note that Mike Williams shows the ability to separate in the shorter and intermediate passing games. So like to see that, like to see that he does have some quickness and can create some openings for himself. But ultimately, I mean, he is just a big physical wide receiver who plays like it. He's listed at 6'3", 225. And I think that his best pro comparison is Alshon Jeffrey.
How about Corey Davis? You mentioned him.
Yeah, and he's a big wide receiver who moves like a small wide receiver. And there are a lot of clips online of him making like circus style grabs. I mean, he caught a lot of passes in college. I thought that he showed a tendency to let the ball into his body pretty frequently, which translated into some drops. I mean, even on like the way that Corey Davis goes up and gets the ball down the football field is much different from the way that Mike Williams does. I mean, Corey Davis will jump up and like try to trap the ball in his body, whereas Mike Williams will go up and catch the ball with his hands. You know, so I think that Mike Williams has an advantage in that aspect of the game. But Corey Davis is a big wide receiver who moves like a small receiver in that he has supreme quickness. I mean, he moves like – he's like the quickness of like a wing player in basketball. And he was an explosive run-after-catch receiver in college. I think that – and Brandon Marshall's game has – changed over the course of the years. You know, he's a different, much different player right now than he was when he was coming out of UCF. But I remember Brandon Marshall when he was coming out of UCF, and I think that Corey Davis's game reminds me a lot of that. I mean, just an incredible run after catch receiver, still trying to develop some of the finer points of the game, especially with catching the ball consistently with his hands. But I think that Corey Davis should be able to make an impact right away, especially in the after catch game, and he should become a very good route runner because of his quickness at his size. I mean, he's listed at 6'3", 213, and I mean he moves like a guy that is much smaller than that.
You mentioned him last week. I've seen you mention him on Twitter a couple times as well. And I don't know if it's really been a good thing because you've been knocking his age or at least pointing out that there's guys that have been in the NFL for a while that are younger than him, and that is Eastern Washington wide receiver Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's a role player in the NFL, and I think that, you know, some people, like, after the Senior Bowl, I guess they really liked him, and this happened with Braxton Miller. The same time the year previous, you know, it was pretty clear that these guys are role players. And they do some things very, very well. But, you know, coming out of the Senior Bowl, like, they get billed as potential first-round picks. And that's just not realistic. Cooper Kupp at Eastern Washington played all slot receiver. The only time that he would move outside would be to catch, like, bubble screens and then run back inside. I thought he showed reliable hands, and he looked to me like a very technically sound receiver. But ultimately, he's an overaged, you know, he's old. He played against the weakest competition of any wide receiver prospect that we're really taking seriously this year. He played in a wide open spread offense where he was just constantly in space, and he beat up on defenders that will never see the light of day in an NFL camp and that were multiple years younger than him. So look, I think that he does show some, you know, NFL caliber tools, and he should have a career as an NFL slot receiver. But I think that the hype on him just got a little bit too strong after the Senior Bowl. I think that he is going to be a second or third round pick, and that's probably where he belongs.
Let's go out to USC, where there's a guy at a minimum has an awesome name, and that is wide receiver Juju Smith-Schuster. Or is it Schuster Smith?
No, it's Juju Smith-Schuster, I think.
Juju Smith-Schuster. All right. Well, I had that one wrong. I know he made a bunch of plays against Penn State in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, and he's a really interesting guy. You know, when I was watching him play, the most impressive thing about watching Juju Smith-Schuster was his quarterback, Sam Darnold, who was a freshman. And, I mean, this dude, he's sick. Like, Sam Darnold is going to be – if his upward trajectory continues like it should, Sam Darnold is going to be a very, very high pick in the NFL draft. I think he's actually eligible next year I could be totally wrong about this, but I think he's eligible next year because he redshirted his first year. I don't know, we'll see. But Juju Smith-Schuster, he was a one-speed wide receiver. I thought he ran – I think that he's going to run like in the 4.5s to 4.6s. Thought he was very comfortable in making catches in traffic. And I think that his ability to create yards after a catch are underrated. I thought that he was a big, savvy wide receiver who played very determined and maxed his talent. But I didn't come away from watching Juju Smith thinking that he was like a big-time talent. I'll be very interested to see how he tests at the combine. This is one of the guys that I'm going to be watching most closely for his measurables because he was very, very productive. But when I watched him play, he did not stand out as like a clearly an NFL athlete. I thought that he was an NFL talent, but you know, there are guys that really jump off to you and from an athleticism standpoint, and Juju Smith did not do that.
How about Western Kentucky wide receiver Taywan Taylor? Been hearing some things about him.
Yeah, this is Josh Norris's guy. A small receiver who showed some ability to win contested catches and you know, play above the rim, even though he's only 5'11". He was actually listed at 6'1" in college, but he showed up to the Senior Bowl. He's 5'11". I thought he showed supreme quickness and the ability to play slot and outside, and I came away comparing him to a cross between Emmanuel Sanders and Kendall Wright. If you ever want to hear anything good about Taywan Taylor, go to at Josh Norris on Twitter. And I think he has Taywan Taylor as the number 4 receiver in the draft.
Well, I know you love breaking down running backs, Evan. I feel like you used to just do running backs. Now you dive into other positions, but running back is sort of your baby. Let's start with Leonard Fournette. A lot of people saying this is the best running back class in years. How about Fournette? We've heard so much about him for so long.
Yeah, he was a guy that I originally watched, and I guess I picked out games where he was hurt. He played a ton of last year hurt, which is a red flag in and of itself, but I was very disappointed in him. And then I was kind of, you know, those were the first couple games that I watched. But then, you know, I was kind of alerted to the fact that he was hurt in those games. And so I watched different games, and I mean, I liked him a lot more, obviously, when he was running healthy. I think that he's going to go to the combine and wow with his size-speed combination. Football Outsiders has used a statistic called speed score, which adjusts your 40 time for your weight. And I mean, it's not a lock that you're going to be a great pro if you have a great speed score. Like Nile Davis had a great speed score. I think Christian Michael had a really good speed score. But, you know, it raises the probability. And, you know, it's always just, you know, at worst, like an interesting thing to have on your resume. I think Leonard Fournette is going to have an incredible speed score, like, you know, maybe run like 4.45 at 235 pounds or maybe even faster. I mean, he is a big north-south downhill straight line speedster with great size. And the question is going to be whether he can play in anything other than a running offense that just kind of allows him to slam forward because he doesn't have a whole lot of like lateral movement. I mean, there will be times when he's like in a position where he has to make a lateral move, and I mean, he'll fall down because he doesn't have the ability to move laterally, you know, in like a fluid or explosive manner. I came away from watching him comparing him to DeMarco Murray as a runner. However, as a receiver, you know, DeMarco Murray was like, I mean, dude caught like over 200 passes in 4 years at Oklahoma, he was a prolific pass catcher in college, and Leonard Fournette very much does not have that on his resume. But I think that Leonard Fournette is a very interesting prospect, and I think that people are going to be wowed by him when he goes to the combine.
What about Joe Mixon from Oklahoma? We all know about the off-the-field stuff. What did you see on the field?
Yeah, so I'm not even going to touch on the off-the-field stuff, you know. But he's like a really, really special player. His ability to make people miss at 226 pounds is just incredible. I mean, one of the best running back prospects that I've ever seen. His receiving ability is so, like, nonchalant and natural. He made one-handed catches on the run downfield. I mean, he is an incredible, incredible skill set, man. And he's already drawing comparisons to Le'Veon Bell. The first guy, and I went back and tried to look at all-purpose running backs historically who weigh over or, you know, are tall and big. And the first guy that I came up with was Ricky Waters, who played at Notre Dame and for the Eagles. And that was the first comparison that I went with for Joe Mixon. You know, the off-field stuff is horrible, but as a player, I think he's the best running back in this class.
Wow, okay. What about his fellow Sooner, Samaje Perine?
Yeah, and this seems to be a guy that some people just detest because watching him is not always like the most fun endeavor. But I think he's got a place in the league. He was the Thunder to Joe Mixon's Lightning, which, you know, calling Joe Mixon when he's listed at 6'1", 226, the Lightning, tells you about all you need to know about Joe Mixon's ability. But Samaje Perine was the power back and the grinder in the Oklahoma offense, just an extremely physical inside runner and blocker. I mean, there would be times where Samaje Perine would be the lead blocker for Joe Mixon and vice versa, actually. Joe Mixon would sometimes be the lead blocker for Samaje Perine. I mean, they use these guys very creatively and together, you know, on the same football field, and it was fun to watch. I think Samaje Perine is a grinder back with who at the end of the game will be an excellent clock killer, and I also think that he is underrated from like a foot quickness and ability to move his body and, you know, work around contact. I think he's underrated in those aspects. I think he's just an underrated prospect. And I think that he is going to be a factor in the NFL. You know, the Lions, the Detroit Lions are a team that could use a back like Samaje Perine to go with all those little scat backs that they have.
How about Dalvin Cook from Florida State? A lot of people seem to think maybe he's the best guy in this class.
Yeah, I think that he is, although apparently he has off-field issues too. You know, I don't really know about those, but I think we will find out more about them. And he has some injury concerns as well. Josh Norris made the comparison of Dalvin Cook to D'Angelo Williams, and I think it was just so spot on. Lightning quick feet and jump cuts. I think that he ran with great tempo. I mean, there were times where Dalvin Cook would be like in a sea of defenders, and the way that he's moving, it doesn't really like stand out to you that if you were just looking at him, it doesn't really stand out to you like how fast he's moving. But then you look at the guys around him and they're all, you know, they're all falling back. You know, he ran with just great tempo, and he showed very good versatility. His pass protection, I thought, that stood out, that needed work. But, yeah, I think that in terms of what we know now, he seems like the cleanest and best skill position player prospect in this draft. And I think that he's going to end up as the 1.01 pick in most dynasty rookie drafts.
What about Stanford running back Christian McCaffrey, Evan? What do you think of him?
Yeah, and he's a guy that I'm going to watch a little bit more. I've done three games on him, and I kind of kept going back and forth on how I felt about him. He's listed at 200 pounds. I thought he might be a little bit lighter than that and shorter than his listing. I think he was 6 foot 200 on the Stanford website. I kind of guessed that he might be 5'10 to 5'11, maybe 197 pounds. He was great in pass protection. I mean, the best pass protection back in this class. I came out of it not really thinking, not knowing whether I thought he was a guy who could be like a feature back in the NFL or he's just a role player. He didn't show great speed to me. And although he runs hard, he didn't really run with power. And I think that, and some people will take this as a negative, I think his skill set reminded me a lot of Knowshon Moreno coming out of Georgia, where he's very good, you know, fundamentally, but he's not going to run over guys and he's not going to outrun guys. And, hey, Knowshon Moreno was the number 12 pick in the draft, and he had several very good years. I would say that he maybe didn't live up to expectations in the NFL, but he had several very good years, and I think that if Christian McCaffrey had a career like that, that would be a success. But I'm going to go back and watch more and try to solidify my take on him. But right now, my comparison for him was Knowshon Moreno.
What about the running back out of Toledo, Kareem Hunt?
Yeah, kind of blew up at the Senior Bowl. I like the way that he ran with great pad level, and he stayed low and shot through gaps. But I really couldn't get a handle on his athleticism. He'll be a guy that I'm watching closely in Indianapolis. I thought he was at times a finesse running back. At times wasn't really like an inside grinder. And I didn't really, just sometimes you'll watch a guy and you don't really come away with a super firm opinion on him. So I'm going to watch some more of Kareem Hunt and pay close attention to his combine.
How about Tennessee running back Alvin Kamara, who's getting some first-round buzz?
Yeah, that's very interesting to me. You know, Rich Rebar, who we haven't had on the show, and hopefully we can have on the show at some point, has done a lot of work showing that running backs who were committee backs in the NFL in college almost never become more than committee backs in the NFL. Now, there are some exceptions. I think Devonta Freeman is one, although he is now technically a committee back. But, the vast majority of committee backs remain role players in the NFL. And Alvin Kamara was essentially a change of pace back at Tennessee behind Jalen Hurd, who was like a big 240-pound plotter who averaged, I think, 3.7 yards per carry last year. I mean, Alvin Kamara's, like, quickness, burst, and acceleration stood out to me. He struggled in pass protection, and, he looks like a committee back. I mean, I thought he looked to me like a committee back when I watched him. Maybe he'll buck the trend. I think he's being overrated in the draft process right now. I'm surprised that he is being discussed as a potential first-round pick. I think he's got a ceiling of like a Giovanni Bernard.
How about Clemson running back Wayne Gallman, Evan?
Yeah, I watched a lot of him, and to me, my takeaway was that he was like a workman-like, determined runner with no outstanding traits, and I compared him to Mike Gillisley.
Wow, okay. I like it. Short and sweet. I have been hearing some things. I know on the College Draft podcast, I was asking Fran Duffy, and he was mentioning University of South Florida running back Marlon Mack. What did you see from him?
Yeah, this guy is really, really interesting because I mean, he lined up as a receiver at times. There were times where he looked like clearly the best athlete on the field at USF. He would make plays with incredible burst and perimeter speed, and he looked like a really intriguing prospect because of his athleticism and receiving ability. There are also a lot of plays where he like bounces the run outside. And, you know, I think that he'll try to be a creator and lose a ton of yards for his offense. You know, he's a guy who's like whose ability and talent are going to have to be harnessed, I think. And I think that there was a running back who was similar to that recently who came out, and that was Tevin Coleman. And I think that Marlon Mack potentially could be used similar to Tevin Coleman because of his history lining up at wide receiver and because of his explosive ability and speed. I think that he's probably a role player in the NFL, but he's one of the most interesting running backs in this class. You know, I have great respect for draft evaluators like Matt Waldman, and I'll be very interested to see what Matt Waldman says about Marlon Mack. We need to bring Matt Waldman on the show, and we should also have Fran Duffy on at some point. We did that last year, and it was a great show to talk about these guys who, you know, you watch them play, and you don't really know what to think at times, or they have, you know, some clear strengths, but they also have some clear weaknesses, and that makes them a little bit tough to decipher.
It's also being talked about as not only one of the best running back classes in a long time, Evan, but one of the best tight end classes in a long time. I'm a little surprised some of these guys even stayed in school for the next year, but we'll start with Alabama tight end O.J. Howard.
Yeah, man, this guy blocks his rear end off, man. I mean, I have never seen I've never seen a tight end block as well as O.J. Howard ever. Like, he loves to block. And it wouldn't just be, like, on the line of scrimmage. It would be, like, from an H-back alignment where he would be, like, you know, like, his job was to just go hammer a guy coming from the backside. And I mean, he loved it. And they would also line him up as like in the slot at times, and he'd go block people in the open field. And I mean, you could tell that he took pride in that. And I thought that like he moves like a wide receiver. I think he's going to measure in, or at the combine, he's going to have very, very strong straight line speed. I think that his straight line speed might be better than David Njoku, who we're going to talk about in a second, because I mean, he flies off the line of scrimmage when he's running routes. However, O.J. Howard, a lot of his catches in the games that I've watched, and I've watched four games on O.J. Howard, so many of them were manufactured touches, where he is lining up at H-back and they just give him a quick shovel pass, or they just give him a quick pitch to go try to run outside. He did not run a lot of like traditional wide receiver or slot receiver or even, you know, detached tight end sort of routes. And I wonder if there's a reason for that. You know, that would just be the one question mark that I had about O.J. Howard. But he, man, I mean, these guys, these tight ends are every bit as good as they've been built. And O.J. Howard was a fun dude to watch.
What about Njoku?
Yeah, this guy's a friggin' stud too, man. I mean, you know, if O.J. Howard wasn't in this draft, I think people would be raving about David Njoku as a blocker as well. And I think that, you know, we have talked, you know, at length in the past about how tight ends struggle as rookies to get on the field as full-time players and help us in fantasy leagues. I mean, Hunter Henry last year, you know, he was sort of usable. But I mean, that was like one of the best tight end rookie seasons of all time. But these guys, I think, have a chance to be different because they are so good at blocking. I think that David Njoku was not quite as good as a blocker as O.J. Howard, but I think that he very much has a chance to be a three-down player right away in the NFL. I thought he was a better all-around athlete than O.J. Howard, whereas I think O.J. Howard might have better straight-line speed. David Njoku was a little bit more natural of a mover and a little bit more natural as a receiver. He lined up in the slot more than O.J. Howard did. He, you know, just kind of carried himself more like a wide receiver and had better body control, I thought, than O.J. Howard. I also thought that David Njoku was better after the catch than O.J. Howard, whereas O.J. Howard would kind of like run to contact. You know, after he got the ball, David Njoku would run around it and very often break tackles after the catch. So, you know, I think that they're a little bit different as players, but man, they are both really friggin' good. And I think that, you know, where they are valued right now, it seems like, I haven't been looking at too many mock drafts, but like the last time that I looked, I think they were maybe in that like 15 to 24 range. It would not be surprise me if by the end of this process, like people are looking at these guys both as top 10 to 15 picks. They are so impressive, man.
Last but not least, how about Evan Engram, who is kind of a tight end?
Yeah, not really. You know, this is like David Njoku and O.J. Howard would line up on the line of scrimmage and go block people. And, you know, they would line up at H-back. And Evan Engram did line up at H-back a decent amount, but it was usually to be a receiver. And he really was a slot receiver at Ole Miss. I mean, I'm trying to think of like maybe like in a goal line set, he lined up on the line of scrimmage. I really can't even remember. No instances of him lining up on the line of scrimmage stand out to me now that I'm thinking about it. And there were times like where he would be asked to block, you know, his responsibility on the play would be to block and he would whiff. I mean, he was like a non-functional blocker, you know, just no impact as a blocker. I think that he's like a big slot receiver. He made some big plays in the seam. He showed that he could pluck the ball out of the air and run with it. I think that he has a chance to help an offense as a pass-catching tight end or like a big slot receiver. But, man, I mean, he's – I even hesitate to call him a tight end based on the way that he was used at Ole Miss. And there really are no indications that he's suddenly going to become a tight end. I mean, he's listed at 6'3", 236, I believe. And he, you know, doesn't show any ability to, like, block people like NFL tight ends are asked to do.
I love it, though, man. What an awesome breakdown. I love the time that you put in with all these guys. Absolutely fantastic. We will keep the train moving next week, and maybe you'll even have some different thoughts after we see how these guys do with the combine over the next few days. As always, really appreciate those of you that spread the word via social media. He's at Evan Silva on Twitter. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL. And, of course, you can always find out when this podcast is posted immediately by following our producer, Brian, at RTF Podcast. And plenty of ways for you to support the podcast, like the Amazon banner ad or PayPal contributions. And, of course, our terrific sponsors. Other than that, though, I am totally, totally stuffed. I think we're done here.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
So I've been telling you guys on all my podcasts now for a long time about richuncles.com. The bottom line is everyone needs to diversify in life. If you have the opportunity, you should take a look at richuncles.com. It's a REIT or a real estate investment trust. They own commercial property, collect rent from the best creditworthy tenants, and then pay you a monthly cash dividend,
which is currently 7% annualized. If you want to see what the Wall Street Journal had to say about him, just go ahead and Google it. Look, like any investment, it has risks. It's not guaranteed, which is why you should find out more at richuncles.com and look up Rich Uncles REIT, a Reg A Tier 2 offering. Go to richuncles.com. That's richuncles.com or call 855-RICH-UNCLES and please let them know that you heard about them on one of the Ross Tucker podcasts.
Rich Uncles REIT is seeking indications of interest concerning its Reg A Tier 2 securities offering. Any indication of interest involves no obligation or commitment of any kind. No money or other consideration is being solicited, and if sent in response, will not be accepted. No sales will be made or commitments to purchase accepted until the offering statement is qualified. This media outlet is being paid under $2,000 by Rich Uncles for this single message.